It is Friday, the 18th of October, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today...
Essentially, it's a form of annoyance, I think, to the Chinese diplomats that the Americans are trying to put forward. So it's more a means of keeping rather intrusive track of what they're doing. It's not aimed at stopping them doing it in the first place.
Washington tells Chinese diplomats to ask permission before they meet US officials, but does the move break international rules? The UK and EU have agreed on a Brexit deal. Will British Prime Minister Boris Johnson succeed in pushing it through Parliament after European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker appeared to rule out any further delay to Brexit? Plus, why German sniffer dogs are learning new skills and a recipe for the success of bookshops. I am Markus Hippi in London. The Monocle Minute starts now. Chinese diplomats in the United States have been told they will have to notify the US authorities before holding meetings with American officials. Beijing says that the decision breaks international rules. Rana Mitter is the director of Oxford University's China Center.
What it is that the US is proposing or demanding, in fact, they're not actually asking for Chinese diplomats to get permission, like a slip or a kind of visa, internal visa, as it were, before they meet anyone. They're required to let the State Department know that they're going to have the meeting. There's no implication at the moment, at least, that they could be prevented from doing so. It's more that essentially it's a form of annoyance, I think, to the Chinese diplomats that the Americans are trying to put forward that if they want to go and meet a university professor or a company director, something of that sort, then they would actually have to let the State Department know. So it's more a means of essentially keeping rather intrusive track of what they're doing. It's not aimed at stopping them doing it in the first place. What, of course, the Americans would say is that some version of this has essentially been what has happened for many diplomats working in China as well. The situation there is often a bit fluid. I think it's fair to say that, you know, I and many other people who visited China have met foreign diplomats and had a cup of coffee, that sort of thing, on various occasions. And that's often quite an informal and an easy thing to do. When those diplomats meet Chinese citizens, I suspect it's more likely that those citizens may find that either on an official or an unofficial basis, someone from the Chinese authorities then wants to go and find them and ask, well, what was it that you actually talked about? So even if there isn't an official system always by which foreign diplomats are supposed to let the Chinese authorities know who they're talking to in China, in practice, it does seem that they have some pretty effective ways of finding out who those people are. I think in the end, what we're talking about here is the way in which the United States wants to project itself. The fact is that we've all got used to a broad difference in which countries like China say, well, actually, we are going to monitor and check up on what people do. And the US, Britain, France may say, well, actually, we're free societies. We're liberal societies. We are going to give you much more freedom than we give you, a sort of freedom shaming, as it were. If the United States is now going down a different sort of route under, you know, the Trump administration, in which they say, well, actually, it's going to be much more tit for tat. It's going to be exactly the same standards that we operate, then it's a rather different sort of moral message being put forward, because the US would no longer be able to say, well, actually, Chinese diplomats or journalists or others are much freer here in the US than they would be in China. Now, I must say there are some rather disturbing aspects beyond this of what the United States is doing. For instance, many Chinese academics who regularly visit the United States are now being told, not that they're banned, but that they can't have, for instance, multiple entry visas. Now, this might sound like quite a technical point, but basically it's a difference between someone well-connected in Beijing, zipping back and forth to Washington and New York, keeping that conversation going on a fairly easy basis, and having to go through a lengthy visa proposal each time they want to come, which, of course, will tend to put them off. That reduces dialogue between the two sides. And at a time of potential trade war and beyond, that is actually a dangerous path for the US to be pursuing.
Rana Mitter, the director of Oxford University's China Center. A Brexit deal has been agreed between UK and EU negotiating teams. The UK's Prime Minister Boris Johnson has praised the agreement, calling it a great new deal that takes back control. It will still need approval in both Westminster and Brussels. Vincent McAvinney is UK correspondent for Euronews. Vincent, how different is this new deal from the one Theresa May negotiated earlier?
Well, it is significantly different. And what you need to look at is Northern Ireland. That was the main bone of contention. And what Boris Johnson has managed to do is something that they said was not possible. He has gotten rid of the backstop. So this new deal will mean that Northern Ireland is aligned to a limited set of EU rules for goods. And Northern Ireland, though, will remain in the UK customs territory, but it's also going to be an entry point into the EU single market. There's also been some agreement on VAT rules. And then after 4 years, after the deal has come into force, there will be votes in the Stormont Northern Irish Assembly as to whether or not to keep with these terms. So in effect, I mean, if you're looking just on a Northern Ireland perspective, this is perhaps worse, if you believe in the integrity of the United Kingdom, than Theresa May's deal, because what you effectively have is a border now in the Irish Sea, not between the Republic and Northern Ireland, but between Northern Ireland and Great Britain. And this is why the DUP have failed to sign off on this, because it means that there could be a move for Ireland and Northern Ireland to be much closer aligned than Northern Ireland and the rest of Great Britain.
Now, will this deal pass in the UK Parliament?
At the moment, I do not think it is very likely that it will be able to pass. Now, the shift has been that the EU has said, we believe, under Jean-Claude Juncker, that there will be no extension. Currently, the thing that everyone was bearing in mind was that the BEN Act, which was passed by Parliament and signed into law, meant that you couldn't leave on October 31st without an extension. You had to get one until January the 31st. So people thought that whatever happened, the UK wouldn't crash out in what's known as a no-deal Brexit. But with that extension apparently not being on offer, what Boris Johnson is trying to sell to MPs is that, look, it's either this deal I've negotiated or we have no deal. Now, he doesn't have a working majority at the moment. He's only got 288 MPs. The DUP are not on board. And he doesn't even have all of his own MPs signed up to this yet. Some of them, the kind of hardest Brexiteers known as the ERG, they said that they would only sign up to the deal if the DUP were on board. So it remains to be seen how many of his own numbers he's got. He's then trying to reach across the aisle and get some of the Labour Brexiteers. They number around 20 or so, but some of them have already started sounding out, the likes of Kate Hoey saying she won't because the DUP aren't on board, but John Mann saying he will. But really, it now looks like Boris Johnson will really struggle to get any Labour MPs, because the party's position is to now have a vote to try and get a second referendum, and they're going to be whipping very hard. So I can't see a path for Boris Johnson to get this through the House of Commons, even making the argument that he's going to try to say, which is that it's this deal or no deal, because I think people will think that the EU might change its mind on that one. So it's very hard. But for Boris Johnson, going into an election, it's possibly the best footing he could get, because he can now say, well, I did get a deal. I fought hard for it. I did it when no one said I could, but it was the opposition parties that boshed it. So you need to back me in order to get this deal through.
Vincent McAvinny, thank you very much for your insights. To Germany now, where sniffer dogs are being taught some extra skills.
It's not just us humans adapting to security concerns in the digital age. In the German state of North Rhine-Westphalia, police dogs are being trained to sniff out more than just drugs and traditional contraband. Five dogs have spent 20 days in a boot camp to search for data. Smartphones, USB sticks, SIM cards, you name it. The lesson is drawn from the recent bust of a major paedophile ring at a campsite in the town of Ludger, where it was a data-detecting dog that finally cracked open the case for authorities. The new K9 team of Alibaba, Herr Rossi, Odin, Joop and Theo, including a Malinois, Dutch herder and Belgian shepherd variously, was presented by state police this week. Anyone travelling through a US airport, where dogs are often still relied on to sniff out explosives, should beware. Fido could soon be on the scent of cybercriminals too.
Finally today, Monocle's executive editor Josh Fennert looks at factors contributing to the success of book retail.
Seeing as the world's biggest meeting of the press and print is in full flow at the Frankfurt Book Fair until Sunday, it seems a good time to assess the fast-changing industry as a whole. The authors, agents and publishers, and those in the ascendant audiobook game who are attending the fair, are mostly positive, but it's the retailers who need help writing the next chapter. Enter James Daunt, the British businessman whose chain of London shops proves that pushing print is still possible, nay, profitable. Having turned around the UK firm Waterstones, he set his sights on reviving the lacklustre sales at US bookseller Barnes & Noble, where he's now the CEO. We caught up with Daunt in New York to ask him about leading a turnaround. His tips? Empower booksellers, stock what people want, create a space that's inviting, and sweat the details. That means the space between the shelves, as well as the display itself. Oh, and do ditch the dross. Cheap fridge magnets and gimmickry don't work here. But that's just the dust jacket version. For the unabridged interview, dive under the covers of our November issue, which just hit shelves this week. Bookshops, it seems, can still aspire to the top of the bestsellers list.
Monocle's executive editor Josh Finnert there. That's all in today's programme. Our studio manager was Jack Chewers. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I am Markus Hippi. The Monocle Minute returns with Ben Rylan on Monday. Enjoy your weekend.